While we are a bit slim on numbers to start with, we do have a quorum, and we would welcome you, and we would welcome those of you in the audience. So we have today a public hearing on House Bill 2371. Jim, if you would give us a summary of the bill, we'll proceed.
Yes, well, Chair and Committee, House Bill 2371 removes student portfolios as part of an assessment that is basis for receiving the Certificate of Initial Mastery. When the Oregon Education Act for the 21st Century was passed in 1991, portfolios were a requirement. In 1995, the legislative made the portfolios an option and changed the wording to may include portfolios. Currently, there is not a method of tracking which school districts may or may not use portfolios since it is not a requirement.
Thank you. With that, we have the author of the bill here, Representative Judy Smith. So if you'd come up, Representative, we'd like to hear from you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have authored House Bill 2371 out of a need for efficiencies where we can find them. Student portfolios require a huge amount of work on teachers. In this time of our budget crisis, and indeed it is, and as we can see in our school districts, either we're cutting back on day schools, teachers are being laid off, wages are being frozen. One of the ways I think that I can help, and that we all can help, is the teacher's workload. Time is as valuable to teacher as almost money is anymore in our classrooms. Let me explain what a student portfolio is. It starts at the elementary grade level, and a student portfolio is a body of work accomplished by the student that passes from year to year to teach teacher each teacher. And they're based somewhat on assessments. And they're also rated on a scale of 1 to 6. There are 8 student portfolios, 3 in speech, writing, 3 in giving speeches, 3 in writing samples, and 2 in math problem-solving samples. During the school year, a teacher is required to have a folder not dissimilar to the one I have here. And throughout the school year, from, say, beginning in September, throughout the school year, a teacher is required to put in, literally, this new piece of information and leave it here. And then as a student progresses, the teacher takes in, puts in a new piece, and then takes out the old one. Well, if you have 30 students in your classroom, as most of these teachers do, or even more, that's a lot of work. And score keeping and keeping track. And then what's happened with the student portfolio document is the student progresses from grade level. At the end of the year, for instance, this fourth grade student portfolio is passed on to the fifth grade teacher. Well, in my experience in talking with teachers, a lot of times they will receive a stack of 30 portfolios for their new students for the beginning of the school year. And that is designed for the new teacher to sit down and read the body of work on each student. As you can imagine, that is a lot of work. I had lunch on Wednesday with a teacher who's been teaching for 20 years in the school system. He's a seventh grade teacher. He's very successful. He says, I don't read them. He says, I do not like having a preconceived notion of what that child has done in the past, whether it's an A student who may be sloughing, or maybe it's whether a subpar student who is really trying to perform well, I like to evaluate them myself. I've talked to many teachers who say that it is a lot of work, it is extremely time-consuming, and it really bites into a lot of their day. Student portfolios seem to be, as the administrator says, were optional. And that surprised me. I think maybe there's a misunderstanding in our school districts, because some of our school districts are implementing them as if they are mandatory. And when it came up in my subcommittee level, we're looking through a list of mandates, unfunded or funded mandates, student portfolio comes on the list of a mandate. So although the language may say, as Jim Keller said, optional, I'm debating, I think there's some confusion. But my main reason for this is I don't think they're needed. I don't think they will advance the progress of our students at an academic level. And I think they're a huge burden of time on teachers. That's it, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any questions? Representative Hobson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, I think you covered part of the question I was going to ask in regards to the optional aspect of it. If we leave the statute as it is, it really doesn't, whether we accept or deny this statute, does it make any difference?
I think it does. I think as long as the SIN and CAM stand, I think it does make a difference on this.
Follow up.
We had testimony, thank you, Mr. Chair, last week from, actually it was this week, I guess, from a number of people who spoke very highly of the use of portfolios and work samples in their district. So I respect the fact that there are differences of opinion, but do you think the law should still remain the same to give those people who do choose to use portfolios the option in writing of doing that?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's going to come down in our declining economic climate. It's just going to be another added burden, you know, on our teaching staff. Education, unfortunately, can't be all things. We're going to have to, unfortunately, pick and choose programs, and I have chosen this one, is to be less of a burden. So whether, I think it needs to be in statute, just because I tend to look at it as a mandate.
Follow up?
No.
No, okay. Representative Smith, I would suspect that you would have universal, unanimous agreement that if we could find ways to reduce burdens on teachers, we would certainly support that, assuming we're not violating the law in some respect.
Well, are you going to ask a question,
yes,
sir?
Yes, I am. If we did away with the portfolios, would there be any other effects or any other consequences other than the portfolios go?
Well, that's an interesting question because we have another bill out there that wants to eliminate SIM and CAM altogether. Whereas I think SIM and CAM is burdensome, difficult to implement, expensive, there's certain parts of SIM and CAM that I like. One of the things that I like is yearly testing. SIM and CAM doesn't test yearly. I like testing every year. We have another situation coming our way in No Child Left Behind mandate from the federal government. And what we need to do at this level, the legislative level, and in conjunction with the Department of Education, is be able to mesh No Child Left Behind with what our current standards are. And as you know, in No Child Left Behind, that requires yearly testing. So I don't think that there would be a decline in student learning at all. In fact, we may have, in some areas, difficulty meeting No Child Left Behind, and in some areas, may meet that requirement without a problem. It depends on school districts. So I'm looking at it purely from a practical, cost-effective means to do this.
Okay. Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Farr.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony, Representative Smith. Your point regarding merging this SIM-CAM or the existing standards with the No Child Left Behind is an excellent point. And in our weekly meetings, the two vice chairs and the chair, that is something that we have really quite extensively spoken of. And I'm glad to hear that other people are thinking the same way we are on that. The question that I have for you is, the change just removes the words "and may include portfolios." There are also a couple of other kind of housekeeping changes there. If this were to pass and the governor sign it, it wouldn't prohibit school districts from using portfolios.
Well, the school districts are free to adopt their own type of student work. You know, if they are still to hold student-parent conferences, you know, they could collect work samples on their own, which I think is extremely valuable. As a parent, I've attended many of these parent-teacher conferences. They're called goal-setting conferences, some of them, and in that there's a work sample. I think that is a really good way. What I'm trying to do is eliminate the mandate in the fact that they have to be done in a certain manner, in a certain process, graded in a certain way, and to accomplish the requirements under student portfolios, class time is taken away for prepare for speeches, and it is a lengthy, cumbersome process. It is important for students in the school system to learn to do math, write, and stand up and speak in front of a group of people. But I'm just trying to get away from the burdensome paperwork that I'm not certain is really helping a whole lot.
Follow up. So your feeling is that by simply having the paperwork, the words in there, it kind of instigates schools to go ahead and...
Sir, I couldn't hear you.
Oh. You're saying that by simply having the words in the... is my microphone not working?
It's fine.
Okay. By simply not having the words in the bill, in the...
statute.
In the legislation, maybe prompts some school districts to have portfolios where otherwise they wouldn't. I guess I'm trying to get to Representative Backlund's question regarding what's the difference, or I guess it was Representative Hobson's question.
You mean the optional versus the mandate?
Mm-hmm. Well, there's no mandate.
Well, according to the Department of Education and the list of mandates that I have received, student portfolios is on there.
Really? So there's a little bit of a disconnect there.
So not only is the issue of student portfolios questionable, it's questionable whether it's a mandate or an optional piece of material, from what I understand from your committee administrator. So if a school district wants to acquire work samples from their students, they're more than they can do that and not be in violation of a statute. Mm-hmm. Did that answer your question?
It came very, very close. I was just trying to understand...
the language of the statute.
Well, what difference it makes having the language in there or not, and I think you helped me with that. As far as the portfolios are concerned, I've seen a bunch of them myself. I have three kids, and the conferences that you talked about, my oldest son, I used to dread the conferences, and my other two children, I love the conferences. Thank you.
Sometimes you don't always want to see the work samples of your child.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, Representative Smith, you have done what might be referred to as getting the ball rolling on issue. it needs to be started by someone or by some process. No.
Shoulders.
No. And so I thank you for bringing this.
Okay, I just want to have one closing remark.
Very good.
Wouldn't you... I'm on four Ways and Means, and I'm on two Ways and Means subcommittees. This morning we had a four Ways and Means committee. Paul Warner came to talk to us. The situation in Oregon cannot be worse. We need to look seriously at what our education system is doing, how much it is spending, and why. This is a very easy fix compared to what's coming down the road. So I would implore the committee to look seriously, ask economic questions, and ask how much time does this take, how much money does it cost, and you need to get at some real, real numbers. So that's why I'm here today. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We have Jerry Wilson, who signed up to testify. Dr. Wilson has come a long ways. We saw him earlier this week, and we're delighted to see you again. You must have had such a good time earlier that you wanted to return.
Mr. Chairman, I did have a good time, and I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you. It just worked out that I was coming back to Salem for a conference, and I talked to Chuck Bennett on the way out regarding the fact that you were going to be talking about portfolios, and so it worked out my schedule. What I thought I might offer the committee is a copy of a dissertation where I looked at the value of portfolios. And what I was attempting to do back in 1992 when I was an English teacher was look at what value did students find in writing portfolios. As a part of that, that I thought might be of some interest to the committee, There is a part of the dissertation which is a review of the literature on portfolios, which is what I provide you a copy of. As I was listening to the comments that were being made before and thinking about this whole issue, what I would like to represent to the committee is that portfolio evaluation is a strong instructional tool that we can use with our students to help them better understand their own writing. It's especially, I think, a strong evaluation tool when it's coupled with a strong scoring guide or rubric. The six-trait writing model represents that type of system. And so part of the reason why it's important to collect different samples of writing then is so that students can learn better what the qualities are of effective writing. In this, you'll see that many of the dates of the references go back to 1980s, the early 1990s, and I think that's important to recognize that that's when many of these things came into place in our state. The idea that a portfolio can have many different purposes is something else I talk with you about on Wednesday. And I think the example that I gave was probably a simple example of how you would keep a best practice in a portfolio and then replace that best practice. And that may be the very skeleton of a portfolio, and the different instructors use them in different ways. But I don't want to speak too much about this other than to provide that type of explanation, and if there are any questions, I'd be happy to answer those questions.
Representative Dalton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dr. Wilson, did your doctoral thesis here work at all, or dissertation work at all, on the value of portfolios in the college application process, perhaps another section? What is the value in your research of the portfolio for making students competitive for higher education?
No, that's not a part of the study, but I would make the comment that I think that it's a part of developing a student's writing abilities or their writing competencies is where the support would lie.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Scherer.
Representative Farr.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Wilson. In the Hermiston district, which is a relatively large single high school district, that's correct?
Yes, we have 1,200 students in our high school.
Can you comment on what type of resources are necessary to maintain the portfolios at the high school level?
Well, I think this is one of the difficulties we have trying to abstract the resource question. And from the comments I made on Wednesday, we do have some support staff who work on the clarification of what's in a portfolio to ensure that it meets the requirements for a SIM. We employ a full-time support staff member or one clerical position. So the cost of that to the district is about $28,000 or $30,000. I think what I would like to imply is that this represents a best practice in writing. It may not be as widely perceived that it is a best practice in mathematics, but that in writing and in writing classes, I would hope you'd see from this type of testimony and this type of background that the portfolio concept has been shown to help students become better writers. And so from the idea of the cost to the teacher, or what does it cost to employ a teacher to do this type of work, I would say that that's difficult to quantify and separate, because it's probably something we would expect our teachers to do. What I heard being said earlier that I would want to also comment upon, though, is the notion to take that to another level. because clearly, when I was working on this in 1992, I had no responsibility to take it to a level where a student might earn a certificate of initial mastery. And I do believe that that puts more pressure on teachers for that level of accountability than they would have otherwise.
Thank you very much.
Representative Dalton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dr. Wilson, how do you find the teachers in the Hermiston School District in terms of their acceptance of this portfolio system?
We've had very little questioning from our staff about this type of evaluation system. I haven't had comments from our teaching staff other than it does require a different level of work. And what we've done this past year is move to and are moving towards an electronic system whereby we are entering those scores electronically, and then we will be able to show the parents and the students a copy of their electronic record. We anticipate that that's going to reduce the burden of the paper trail significantly, especially at the lower grades, because these best practice pieces are kept at other grade levels as well.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Dr. Wilson, do you have work groups of teachers that get together to sort of share notes about how to conduct the portfolio? You know, as the school year goes on, do they work together? And if they do, what sort of feedback are you receiving from that?
Chiefly, what we do is we provide training for our staff to use the six-trait scoring model. And so they're working on making sure that when they score the students' writing that goes into the portfolio, that there's a certain level of reliability to those scores. That's the chief reason we get our teachers together for that.
And the feedback?
The feedback is simply, right now we need to do more of the training. We're finding that our writing scores are slipping some, and we believe that we have to be more effective in delivering that that training, because I think there's a question, if you focus too much on one form of literacy, say phonics instruction, as to whether or not you'll continue to produce the same level of results that you are in another, and that would be in the area of writing.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, thank you, Dr. Wilson. We appreciate, again, your happening to be here and being willing to come before the committee and give us your views. And so, again, we thank you.
Thank you for the opportunity.
You bet. I think we have a trio of those who want to testify. Michael Mann, Katie Zatwich, and Kelsey Blakely. Latchley, okay, excuse me. And be sure each of you identify yourself for the record, name and perhaps where you're from, and yeah.
My name is Kelsey Blatchley, and I'm from Gresham, Oregon, and I go to Clear Creek Middle School.
My name is Katie Witch. I'm from Gresham, Oregon, and I go to Clear Creek Middle School.
I'm Michael Mann, and I'm a teacher at Clear Creek Middle School.
Good. Well, begin.
Right. Chair Backman, I thank you for this opportunity. My name is Michael Mann. I have been teaching middle school language arts and social studies in the Gresham-Varla School District for 13 years. I am a member of the first group of teachers in the state to be certified by the National Board for Professional Teaching Standards in 2000. My certification is in early adolescent English language arts. My career as a teacher follows roughly the design and implementation of educational reform in Oregon, beginning with House Bill 3565, which is popularly known as the Katz Bill. I've been fortunate enough to work in proactive school district where the standards were seen as a constructive way to promote and document higher level thinking and performance in students. The majority of my work with SIM and CAM has been at the benchmark 3 level, which is 8th grade, although I have worked on articulation committees between the high school and middle school levels in developing standards language and assessments in social studies and language arts. I also served on the Department of Education committee charged with designing the work samples for the 10th grade social science analysis standard. I'm here to voice my opposition to plans to eliminate the portfolio language from state law. I want to make clear that my opposition is based wholly on my work as a classroom teacher, and I want to frame my comments within the context of the value I believe that students in Oregon derive from work samples compiled in portfolios. Over the last several years, I've had the opportunity to discuss educational reform in Oregon with other National Board certified teachers, with administrators, and many of the business and higher education leaders involved in the Oregon Education Compact. These conversations have helped me see the vision behind SIM and CAM and how vitally important they are to the clearer and higher standards Oregon students are working towards. I don't think that any of us who embraced educational reform, including House Bill 3565, SIM and CAM, and the state standards, realized implementation would prove as daunting and problematic as it has. I've heard members of the legislature state flatly that SIM and CAM don't work. I take issue with that claim. My own experience working with educators across the state has shown me that there are districts and schools where the leadership has enthusiastically embraced the vision behind SIM and CAM. These leaders have been able to communicate that vision with teachers and students. SIM and CAM have worked, and the proof is that students are performing at a higher level. Oregon's education reform movement was and continues to be challenging and visionary. It was originally driven by the joint bipartisan efforts of legislators, educators, and business leaders who saw the need to foster deep thinking and problem-solving skills in Oregon students, skills that were not and are not guaranteed by a high school diploma. All parties agreed that what Oregon needed was clear evidence regarding what each student knows and is able to do. The standards we now have for students are high and clearly articulated. Preparing students to meet these standards is challenging and rigorous. It has required new thinking, hard work, and a large investment of time. I want you to know that in many schools, the hard work has been done and continues to be done. In school after school, students have welcomed the challenge and risen to it. We expect more of students today than we did before SIM and CAM, and across Oregon, students have risen to those expectations. I have to admit, I'm uncertain of what this legislation would do by deleting the reference to portfolios in the law. It seems as if the intent is to imply that collecting work samples as part of assessing student performance is wrong. The state does not require portfolios. What it requires is that students have the opportunity to demonstrate proficiency in the work samples, and that the scores for these samples should be compiled. These student work samples are one part of a two-pronged approach to assessing student knowledge, the other component being standardized content knowledge testing. I believe both types of assessment are absolutely essential to allow students to demonstrate the depth and breadth of their learning. In my work, I find that giving students multiple work sample opportunities and collecting these in a portfolio has tremendous value. By the eighth grade, my students' portfolios include at least 9 writing samples in various genres, 3 multitask reading assessments scored for comprehension, extending understanding, and text analysis, at least 2 social studies analysis pieces, and 6 public speaking performances. These portfolios demonstrate, in ways no standardized test ever can, my students' ability to weigh and evaluate information, to make supported conclusions, to analyze, to think critically about complex issues, and to do sophisticated problem solving. Portfolios have value because they allow students choice in selecting and highlighting their best work, as demonstrated in the work samples. My students and I believe their portfolios clearly document the higher levels of thinking expected from students in Oregon today. If the goal behind this legislation is to ultimately eliminate the work sample requirement, all we're left with is content knowledge multiple choice testing, which presents an incomplete and one-dimensional picture of student learning. In finishing, I'd like to address our current educational climate. Before January 28th, many of us were focused on that date and the good or bad news it would bring. At about 8:30 that evening, when the results of Measure 28 were clear, I made a conscious decision to look forward and plan for January 29th and the days and weeks to follow. Many Oregon educators are focused on the budget crisis and are simply trying to minimize the painful cuts we're all facing. I'm asking you now to shift your focus. We truly have much in Oregon education that is still vital and strong. SIM and CAM remain an example of what is best about education in this state. It seems to me that as we look to the future, we must continue to plan what education in Oregon will look like. We must strengthen what remains visionary and good. The classroom work sample requirement and their collection in student portfolios is one of the best things we do well in Oregon. I want to thank you for your time and your attention to this issue.
Thank you very much. Representative Hobson.
Wow, he said it all. Thank you,
Mr. Chair.
Representative Dalto.
Thank you. I have a question for Mr. Mann. Mr. Mann, how much time do you spend a week managing student work samples over a week and over the period of a school year?
Chair Backlund, Representative Dalto, that is a difficult question to answer because collecting student work samples is, I see it as essential to my job. It's just one of the things that you do. And you know, I deliver instruction, I collect student work, I assess student work. It's what I'm paid to do and what I've chosen as my career. So that's a very difficult question to answer. I'd continue to do it whether I was required to do it or not.
Follow up. When do you do it in your day? In the 24 hours, I don't mean just the work day. Do you work through these portfolios at home? Do you do it in your prep period?
Most of it is done within my work day, before and after I have students. But there is a quantity of it that I do have to take home with me.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
Do you ever spend any time during classroom periods working on that?
You mean when I have students in the room?
Sure.
There are times during the year that that part of our job, the students and I together, is to work on organizing the portfolios. So yes, not more than 3 or 4 hours, maybe during the year though.
That the students would follow
that the students and I are working together on actually compiling their portfolio.
Great, thank you, Mr. Mann.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mm-hmm.
Representative Avakian.
I would gather by what you've said that you would continue using this method because you see it as valuable, whether it's specifically in the law or not. Is that right?
Most definitely, yes.
The bill we have from Representative Smith before us, you know, simply determines whether or not the wording regarding the portfolio is included in the law or not. Does that part really make any difference to you?
I think that what I do is best practice. I am not sure that I would have started it if I wasn't required to. Does that answer your question?
Very well, thanks.
Mr. Chair. Representative Farr.
Thank you. You're required by your school district to do that?
I am required by my school district to keep a record of the work sample scores. I am required by my school building to maintain a portfolio.
By the building. Okay. Another question.
Follow up.
Mm-hmm. After, I realize you're a middle school student, so that you may not be the perfect person to ask this question to, but after a student graduates from high school, what happens to the portfolio in your district?
I can't answer that, actually.
Thank you.
In my district, and I understand the concerns about maintaining the portfolios, we made a decision 3 or 4 years ago to not send the portfolios on to the high school. The portfolio is a collection of student work, and it belongs to the student. I have the advantage in my building of working with my students for 3 years. I am their English and social studies teacher when they come in on day one in sixth grade, and I continue to be until their last day of eighth grade. And then so their portfolio stays with me for those humanities subjects. And at the end of the eighth grade, I have a card where their benchmark scores are listed, the 6-point writing traits and all the 6 writing traits and all those sorts of things are recorded on a card. The high school has indicated to us they don't want the portfolios. They don't have time to look at the portfolios. They don't have storage space for the portfolios. So we send that card on to the high school, and the portfolio is returned to the student.
Excellent. So the student, when they leave your class at the end of the year, they take the portfolio with them?
At the end of the eighth grade, yes.
Okay, great. And it seems that things are done very differently depending on which district and even which building you're in. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mann. Ladies?
Katie and I put together a few notes that we thought would be most important for us to address as students, and so she's going to read those.
Discontinuing portfolios would hurt a lot of kids' chances for jobs and other activities. Multiple choice tests are great and show intelligence, but when you take the test, you can't show your speaking skills, which might ruin your chance for valedictorian, student body president, or anything else with speaking involved. They wouldn't have any proof of your speaking skills. Getting that one job may depend on how well you speak out loud. But when you can't show them record of that, they're not going to choose you before someone who has the credits and can show them right off the bat. If you have the benefits of being able to have portfolios now, in the future, you'd be able to show your colleges, your records of your past speeches, and they can see your work ethic. Portfolios can help you better yourself. You can look back on past work samples and improve or perfect mistakes. Not only does discontinuing portfolios not show your speaking skills, it also gives you the disadvantage of not being able to show your organization and level of potential you are accountable for.
Thank you. May I ask you, what would be your view as to the attitude of your classmates about portfolios?
We felt like, as a student, as you're looking back on your portfolio, as we do like throughout the year, we can see our growth and development, and everyone likes to look back and see where they can improve, and having this portfolio enables us to do that.
Very good. By the way, you didn't look nervous at all.
Very good.
Well, thank you very much.
If I may, Mr. Chair.
Oh, excuse me. Representative Nolan.
Is by itself a demonstration of the point that this young student made about the value in learning how to speak and organize one's thoughts to be persuasive. I think you did an excellent job, and it reflects well on the teaching that you've received.
Thank you.
And put that in your portfolio.
Well, thank you, Representative Nolan. That was very good. Well, thank you. Appreciate your being here. Next to sign up is Mr. Dave Guile.
Good afternoon, Chairperson Backlund, members of the committee. My name is Dave Guile. I have just completed 3 years as the Director of Instruction for Salem Kaiser School District and have returned to a principal assignment this year. And my comments not only address my own feelings, but also, I believe, the feelings of 24J administrative staff. ORS 329465 really does not require portfolios, as you all know, but what it does is it implies that districts need to accept them and utilize and maintain them if requested. This does add to the record keeping not only for the classroom teacher but also for the school district, because they become for at least a period of time part of the student's permanent record. One of the concerns that we have inside 24J is that the use of portfolios, or the lack of it, depending on how you look at it across the state, has resulted in a lack of congruency between districts. When students move from Tigard to Salem or from Salem to Tigard, and one district requires portfolios and along comes the portfolio with some assumption of value, and then the receiving district does not even consider it, essentially that has cheated the student out of whatever that assessment value was. Likewise, a student who does not take a portfolio with them to the receiving district who uses them goes without a common set of information. And it really isn't an issue of the assessment itself and the record keeping of it. It's the portfolio. And part of the problem is, what is a portfolio? It's ambiguous at best. I've seen portfolios come in boxes. And when Dr. Wilson talked, you know, he talked about the use of a writing portfolio. Well, certainly a writing portfolio is relatively easy to maintain, and they certainly do have value. I would agree with that. But the wording in the current law doesn't say this is confined just to writing or just to social studies. And when you see solar systems come in boxes with an expectation that a school is going to hang on to those until the end of the year and at the end of the year do whatever with them, that really becomes a storage and maintenance problem for school districts. So what I think we would like to see is that whatever mandates exist from the state and from the federal government are as congruent as possible. Right now we're faced with No Child Left Behind. There is a set of assessment requirements that go with that. We would certainly think that the assessments within the state need to be congruent with that, so we don't have competing systems of assessment. And when we look at this change in this law, does it eliminate alternative means of assessment? We don't believe it does. Work samples will still exist. And should they be evaluated on a reasonable point scoring system? Yes, they should. But once they're recorded and it goes into the student's permanent record, then that property, the portfolio piece of evidence, should be returned to the student and stay with the student to be maintained, not with the school district or the school or the teacher. I really believe in the comments that the previous speakers made. I think there is value for kids, especially to be able to look at their work, and what a luxury to have kids for 3 years. But that is not the case in Salem-Keizer. Those kids have different teachers not only every year, but probably each semester. And so the likelihood of that portfolio being able to move on in an efficient manner and be well used is far less likely in Salem-Keizer. However, the scores of those pieces of work do move on, and we do have the luxury of having those recorded electronically, so the electronic record stays with the student. And that's really where I would hope the state would get to, where we have a common place across the state where student scores can be recorded electronically and can move district to district. But at this time, and with the budget problems and space issues that school districts have, we would certainly like to see the language regarding the portfolio eliminated, and if certain schools have the ability to maintain those, more power to them. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Colleagues, I might make a comment about Mr. Guile. Mr. Guile and I have known each other for a long time, and his daughter was a student in one of my advanced placement U.S. history classes, and was an outstanding student and a very fine person, which is a credit to Dave and his wife. So I wanted to say that publicly, Dave.
Thank you very much. I'll tell Jennifer that.
You do that, please.
Yeah.
And we're glad you came down.
Right. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Bill Oddie signed up next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Bill Oddie. I'm the Associate Superintendent for the Office of Assessment and Evaluation, and came just to provide you with some information about portfolios and to confirm what's been said before, that this is, students are not required by policy or practice to produce portfolios to earn the SIM. If you remember my testimony from the last Wednesday, we introduced the concept of a three-legged stool of assessment for SIM, that there are knowledge and skills, multiple choice types of tests, on-demand performance from the state, and then classroom work samples. Portfolios could be that third leg in terms of the classroom work, a way to assess them. And as Mr. Keller mentioned in his overview, the state went down that road to use portfolios as a requirement for that local assessment piece, and we decided not to. Not the least of the reasons was that it was a management burden on schools and districts to do so. So the current system with work samples is how we assess that piece. As others have and probably will say, that there are many uses for portfolios, and they'll speak eloquently to the advantages of them. I'll keep it simple in terms of conclusion. We're not requiring them. We do recognize that we have probably a responsibility for doing better in making clear what is mandated and what is not, and in both in portfolios and with the SIM generally, we'll take that on in the future. And then I'll answer any questions.
Bill, looking ahead, I think there currently is a relationship, is there not, between portfolios and the soon-to-be-implemented PASS admission system or standards at the OUS?
Yes, you could say that the the past, they call them collections of evidence, are a type of portfolio, and they are in place. There currently is a way for students to earn scholarships, in other words, they collect their evidence over time, bring it together, and they assess it, and the ratings they get on the whole collection of evidence can be used for scholarships and are planned to be an optional way to get admission into higher education and particular programs within higher ed.
You said an optional way to be admitted.
I'm sure Christine Tao or others who are in the plan could tell you about that. My understanding is that I believe the status is that this time it is an option. I don't know if they have decided on a fixed date on which that is the way in which they would do that.
So are you saying then, Bill, that if portfolios are made optional or eliminated, I should say, as this bill suggests or mandates, then the past system would have a difficult time operating?
Mr. Chairman, others could conclude that better, but yes, that if this were defined as a prohibition on what they're doing and planning and done quite a bit of work on, that would, I presume, be a problem for the higher ed system.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Decker Halstead, please. Did I pronounce that correctly?
You sure did.
Oh, thank you. Good.
Well, I guess that I'm here from a little different standpoint. I just retired from teaching, so what I'm going to present...
Excuse me, Decker. Could you identify yourself?
Oh, Decker Halstead.
Yeah,
retired school teacher. As I said, I just retired, so many of these comments are my experiences the last 10 years as I've gone through this system and what we did in our school district. And just so you know, I was a high school teacher at Newburgh High School in Newburgh School District. So that is what I'm going to present to you is what we did and what we're doing at Newburgh High and in the Newburgh School District. And as you can see, school districts do different things. just a little bit, I just tried to jot down some things here that if memory serves me correctly, the SimCam educational program for Oregon students has been in progress for about 12 years or longer. It was probably adopted, as you know, sometime in 88 or 89. And this was a program to make Oregon the education leader in the United States and place Oregon students number one. This was Oregon's way of being on the cutting edge of the national education program called Goals 2000. And a major part of Oregon's SIM requirements to meet Goals 2000 was a personal portfolio developed and kept by each student. This was basically to be started in the third grade, and it would then be added to by the student each year until graduation from high school. This was said to be a sure way for students to be accepted into the college or university of their choice, even if grades and SATs weren't high enough. This was proven to be not the case, as out-of-state schools, as well as many Oregon schools, won academic achievement grades and SATs. Portfolios are nice, but if a student doesn't have the grades and the SAT scores, they aren't getting accepted. And so as you look at this and as I go through the next part of this, keep in mind this is what we do in the Newburgh School District. And so that's where I'm coming from because that's what I know. And that's what we did. We were simply told that portfolios are something we were going to do. And I didn't realize I pulled this bill up and looked at it and had that little parenthesis in there. It was an option because we were told this is what we were going to do, and we did it. Okay, so... to me, these portfolios from our school district should be dropped from the SIM for the following reasons. They're very costly to keep and maintain. In the Newburgh School District, they're not little yellow manila folders. They're reinforced super-duper folders that have various compartments and pockets in them and all. They're quite expensive. They're not cheap. Many, many special secretaries are hired to categorize and file this material. In the high school, we have three full-time secretaries. That's all they do all day long, is file this material in a room. That's where they work, keeping track of these portfolios for the high school kids. Many, many days throughout the year as a teacher, it was spent in meetings to make sure we as teachers were doing these portfolios correctly. And then our class was left to a substitute teacher. Most of the in-service days that we had centered around, are you doing the portfolio correctly? Are you compiling it correctly? Then this takes teacher time away from preparing and teaching. The grade school teachers had to meet with each student to help them decide what goes into their portfolios. Once again, hired subs as the teacher met with those students during that day. Their classroom had sub teachers. The grade school report cards that the elementary teachers had to fill out was very, very complex. Most of the teachers I talked to at the elementary level, a minimum of an hour and a half, sometimes 2 hours, to fill out this report card that went into the portfolio. Middle school was basically the same way as a grade school when it came to the card. In the high school, it was the student's responsibility to keep this portfolio, but as you would check on the kids that you had under you, they weren't doing it. So you had to constantly remind them to update their portfolio, and then you had to constantly let them redo the work and retake the test so it would be good enough for them to save so it could go into the portfolio. So they would retake tests and redo the work so it met a quality that they wanted to put into their portfolio. You know, it was them that chose it. So it was not basically in this portfolio in our district. It was not an overall, all-around achievement of what the kid did. It was their extremely best work. Maybe after they retook a test 4 or 5 times, they redid a project several times before it went into the portfolio. And then once again, this was a requirement that the students had to do, but at the high school, they were told you have to have the portfolio or you don't graduate. But then they found out, no, you really don't need it to graduate. So then it was hard to get them to do it, although we were told they had to do it. So it became a very, very time-consuming on our part as teachers. Many parents reflected the same thing. Oh, I thought they needed it, but now I find out they don't need it. So they were not real supportive in that way. They're not mandated, as we found out, within the state. So some school districts require them. Many do not. And once again, that's already been brought up. It's a problem when a kid comes from one district to the other with that, or they don't have it and it's required in ours. So being these are not required by schools of higher learning, I called up. I was always under the impression with the past that and I called up Western Oregon, and they said no, they didn't. That was not required. Portfolios aren't required. I called several out-of-state schools. They didn't even know what I was talking about when I mentioned the portfolio. So that, getting them into higher learning, probably no, as far as what I found out. So to me and my fellow teachers that I used to teach with in our school district, they would be very, very excited about eliminating this portfolio requirement in the SIM. And they simply told me it was a good start in fixing the SIM-CAM nightmare in Oregon education. The whole thing has been really a nightmare to us in Newburgh. And so most of the teachers that I have contact with feel that if the SIM-CAM whole system would be eliminated, it would save millions of dollars that could actually be used to teach students instead of pouring money into a system that almost from day one hasn't worked. Thank you.
Okay. Decker, at the very end there, your statement was, we were talking about portfolios, but you've included the SIM-CAM elimination.
Oh, yeah.
You would eliminate SIM-CAM, which would include the portfolio.
Right, right. I mean, that was just something as far as we as teachers, as we sat around and talked about this, we were not really thrilled with the whole idea because of the vast amount of rework that we have done, and I don't know how many days of coming up with something and then it didn't work, and so then we had to go back and do it again and again and again, and all this time we're out of the classroom.
Mm-hmm. Was that ongoing, or was that at the beginning of the...
It was ongoing. It was ongoing from about 1990 with me up until I retired.
Okay.
It was yearly.
Representative Dalton?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Halsey, I just wanted to know what you taught before you retired.
What I taught?
Yes, sir.
I was a history teacher.
History teacher.
Yes.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Nolan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Halsey, if another teacher in another school finds a portfolio system helpful to accomplish his or her instructional objectives, do you care if they use portfolios?
I don't care at all, no. Like I said, I really wasn't aware of that. I read in there where it sort of has parentheses that it's an optional thing. And if it works for some people, that's great. Because as a teacher, you know, what works to help the student accomplish a goal, that's what I'm for.
Thank you.
Representative Hobson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You mentioned several times and used the expression "we as teachers" in the Newburgh School District. What proportion of the teachers do you think in that district feel as you do?
What proportion?
Yeah, you say "we as teachers", and I didn't get a feel for that.
Yeah, and I'm writing this right. I understand what you're saying. I would say, being I was at the high school, that I would say within the high school, I would say that it was probably somewhere around 70% would feel this way at the high school.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
Going along with Representative Nolan's question about you having no objection to other people using it if they found it helpful, with that in mind, would it serve any purpose to pass this as a law?
To pass it as a law.
The bill that is before us to take out the reference.
Take out the wording. I think if I go back and I look at Newburgh, if the wording was out, then, like I said, Newburgh took this, that it was something that they had to do. So it was dictated to us that we do this. If the wording wasn't there, then it could be made optional for certain, because I had a colleague that loved it. And he felt that the portfolio was very, very useful. He would have done it anyway, because that was a good tool that worked for him. But I think that by taking it out, then districts wouldn't look at it and mandate it and put so much effort into it if it was something they didn't have to do and left it optional. Does that answer your...
Follow up.
Thank you. Do you object to it being an issue of local control for each district to make that decision about?
No. No, I think it probably, to me, it should be local control.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
I might add, Decker, before I was elected to this body, I too was a history teacher for a long, long time.
I recognize the name and, McNary, I think.
Yes. Victoria Lukic, please.
Real brotherhood of history teachers.
Yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, that's okay. Okay, if you're ready, I think we are.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Victoria Lukic, and currently I'm an assistant principal at David Douglas High School in Southeast Portland. David Douglas is a traditional, comprehensive high school with approximately 2,400 students, grades 9 through 12. Prior to being an administrator there, I taught math for about 19 years. Thanks for allowing me the time this afternoon just to chat a little bit about what portfolios, what we're doing with portfolios at David Douglas, and why I think they're a valuable tool in the assessment and learning process. I'll also explain how our sample work collection is different from what the state requires and why we've chosen those differences. I want to first start off with an analogy. When you go to your physician for your yearly checkup, you don't walk in and have him do one test and tell you whether or not you're healthy. He does a variety of tests. He does blood work. He does a physical exam. He sits and visits with you and gathers anecdotal data and then gives you a report on where your strengths, where you're real healthy, maybe some areas that you could clean up. Same thing with students. When we're assessing their educational health, we need as many tools as we possibly can gather, including portfolios and work samples. Now, I'm a little unclear if this legislation is eliminating work samples or just the saving of the work samples, but I can address them all. I think both having the students do them and assess them and saving them, both of those activities are certainly worthwhile. But I think to get an accurate, thorough, complete picture of a student, you need to have as many tools in your bag as you possibly can. When we first learned about SIM in 1991, it was my understanding that that was what the whole spirit of the law was, to not be just a snapshot one-day test score, but to be a comprehensive, big-picture look at a student. Some kids aren't good test takers. If we just go by a test, they may appear that they don't get it when they actually do. I would like to compare the David Douglas SIM to the state SIM, and I just do that so my comments kind of make sense a little bit. And I have a handout that's titled Comparison of David Douglas to State SIM. Why are there two? Because we started on ours in 1991, as we were told, and got it going in 1997. And then when the state came on board with theirs in 2001, we made sure ours aligned with that. So our students had the opportunity to earn David Douglas SIM and or state SIM. A little confusing, but that's the way it worked out. The David Douglas SIM certainly does set a high bar because we don't allow D's in core classes anymore. So it's not just the work samples and the test scores, but students have to get an A, B, or C in core classes, the core academic classes. Should they get them in all classes, including electives? Absolutely. We're not there yet. So we just started with just the core academic classes. If they get a D or certainly an F, they retake that class. So that was one way we moved the bar up. We have a portfolio of 27 work samples from all the core areas plus elective classes. So obviously we think collecting work is very important compared to the state, which I think is 10, and if that's not the exact number, I apologize for that. We just know ours will cover that because we have all those areas plus some. We do, of course, have students take the state assessments as we're mandated to. Our cutoff score for earning the David Douglas SIM is lower in each category than what the state SIM has. And then the key is the very last one. Ours is required for graduation beginning with the class of 1999, so they got it as sophomores in 97. Now, that fact right there addresses one of the concerns about SIM. I realize this isn't exactly a portfolio issue, but it's a SIM issue. People asking, why should a kid care if I get a SIM or not? Or parents, why should I even have my student even be tested? Because what does it matter if he gets a SIM? A state SIM? I don't know. Are businesses hiring kids more that have their state SIM? And most businesses don't even know what a state SIM is right now. We're trying to get the word out, but it's not out yet. So right now, whether or not a student has a state SIM doesn't mean a whole heck of a lot. So it really is hard to sell that to a kid and their parents. But the David Douglas SIM means graduation. Parents certainly understand that. So making a graduation requirement puts some meat in it and really, you know, put that as the carrot at the end then. Before I go on, are there any questions about that? Okay. Our graduation requirements are on the back as well. Some of the concerns that have been raised about portfolios is that it's a paperwork nightmare, that it costs a lot of money, people don't understand it. That certainly may be true at other schools. I can only speak for my school, and I've only been in a high school. I can say it's a large high school, 140 teachers, 2,400 kids. All students have portfolios. They even have them from kindergarten on, so they come in knowing how to do a portfolio. As one of the young ladies from Clear Creek mentioned, students use it as not only an assessment tool for a teacher, but it's also a learning tool for a student. I taught math, and I could tell the students in June, boy, your proofs are so much better than they were in September. But if the student could look back at those proofs in their portfolio, they recognize that, and we're very proud of that. As a parent, I have two children of my own. I would like a collection of their work. Of course, I want the teacher to be grading the work on a scoring guide and giving the student the score. But I also appreciate the fact that all the work is collected in a portfolio. My students are in the North Clackamas District, and they also have portfolios. So from a teacher, student, parent perspective, I think it's a good idea. One of the most exciting days of the year, each year, are student-led conference days in June, where we close school for 2 days and students present their portfolio to their parents. It's a requirement at the end of ninth grade and at the end of 10th grade. It was such a success that now we've implemented it with juniors and seniors as well. But they have an opportunity to stand up in front of any teachers that they've invited and their parents and their SIM mentor to share the work in their portfolio. This includes ESL students, special ed students, regular ed students, they all have a chance to shine and show what they've done over the course of that year in their various classes. So that's another reason to have the portfolio. Again, it's not in terms of assessment, but it's really a learning tool. The students organize that and prepare the speech and make the presentation, and they're very proud. If you have a student that didn't get the job done, they're on the hot seat because they have to explain to mom and dad why they don't have the work done in their portfolio or why they did a sloppy job. So without the collection, we wouldn't be able to have those conferences. An attendance at our conferences, for student-led conferences, ranges from 96 to 98%. Regular conferences that we typically have in November and April is about 30% for parents coming. So obviously the parents appreciate this as well. We've worked at our school to streamline the process. We recognize the importance of portfolio assessment and the SIM program as a whole. And so we put our efforts not into complaining about how much work it is, but looking at how can we streamline it so it will work for us. And that's what we've done. Our principal took one person out of the classroom and made them school improvement coordinator, and they organize SIM and CAM efforts at our school. I find it a little ironic that we're talking about eliminating portfolios from SIM right now, because we've just been chosen along with 10 other schools as a pilot for CAM portfolios, and they've given us the go-ahead to try these out and see how it works. And I'll tell you, it's working great. We started last summer. Students have really gotten into it. They're appreciating having a collection of their CAM experiences. I wanted to address also the concern about our colleges using this. That wasn't one of the reasons that at David Douglas we ever adopted portfolios. There were lots of other reasons. Mm-hmm. Having students take them to a college was not it. I don't know if a college is going to be interested in what a kid did in 8th grade or even 9th grade. But the practice of putting together a portfolio, organizing their work, looking at their growth, the self-reflection, all of that is a worthwhile experience. In my own education, I'm still going to school at Portland State, and for TSPC, I had to put together a portfolio to give to TSPC to showing that I could be a good administrator, to show that I had proficiency in all the 9 areas that TSPC indicated I needed to have. So any work that I would have done prior to putting together a portfolio certainly would have benefited me later. Did it get me into college? No, but it did serve a purpose. I want to just kind of echo what the other speakers have said, and I just, on a personal level, we're going to do portfolios. We're going to do SIM. We're going to do CAM. It's the best thing that's ever happened. It's been 10 years, 12 years of very hard work, but very gratifying. Students, teachers, parents alike feel that we're on the right track and really appreciate our efforts.
Thank you very much.
Questions?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Farr.
Thank you. I think you told us, but I'm going to ask this question anyway. When students leave middle school, they do not carry their portfolios to the high school. Is that correct?
I hadn't said. I can appreciate the gentleman from Clear Creek, because we've had this discussion with our middle schools. Part of the problem is logistically how a middle school is organized and how a high school is organized. And when a student comes to the high school, they have 8 different teachers, and who really wants to see that, and are you going to go run around? And I'm not using that as an excuse. It probably couldn't be done. I mean, it probably could be done. What we have done, and it seems to work, is have students at the end of their 8th grade year. I said they have student-led conferences at the end of every year. Even kindergartners have student-led conferences in our district now. So at 8th grade, at the closing of 8th grade, the student selects their favorite pieces, a favorite writing, reading, and speaking piece, and math piece, 4 pieces, and puts it in their portfolio, and that goes to the high school. So it's only that skinny, and it can go in the back of their portfolio, and it stays there. It kind of gives the mentor that they're going to be hooked up with in high school a little bit to get to know the student before they meet them in the fall. Mm-hmm. It's not really used for any kind of grading purposes or any evaluation purposes, but it's there. I'll follow up. I'm going to assume the next question might be, what do we do with them after we're done with them? They when they get their SIM at grade 10 or whenever that is, most of them get at grade 10, we have a ceremony that they get to collect their SIM portfolio from their mentor, and the parents are invited, and it's kind of a celebration with cookies and punch and all that stuff. And it's their work, so they get to take it home. The portfolio is not the assessment tool. They were doing the work samples already, and they were already assessed. The portfolio is just the collection of all that. So they get to take it home at that time, and then they're starting to work on their CAM portfolio, which will also be theirs when they exit.
Thank you. Mr. Chair?
Follow up.
My children's portfolios are in many boxes in our garage. Thank you.
Victoria. You are obviously very enthusiastic about portfolio. Could you assess maybe the views of your teachers?
Well, when we first put this in practice, and it has been, I don't want to say it hasn't been a lot of work and doesn't take time, because it does. But knowing that we were doing the right thing for kids, that's always what it comes down to for us. And part of it, we were fortunate in that when we started, we had a very old staff, and they were retirement age, so we were getting new people on. And when you get new people on and you just are doing it, they just kind of follow along and appreciate the efforts. We always approach it in a way that you're already doing this. This shouldn't be the tasks themselves, the activities, the work that goes into the portfolio shouldn't be something new that you didn't already have in your curriculum. We absolutely did not want a teacher to be going along and then Wednesday comes and says, class, let's stop, let's do a SIM project so we can put it in our portfolio. We would rather have you, and we teach our teachers, and I do a class for new teachers, you go along, you do the project. You know, Representative Backlund, your geometry proof in this unit looks great. Let's put it in your portfolio. What do you think? And so we do the paperwork, and it goes in the portfolio. I was going to grade it anyway. So nearly everything we were doing was already happening for a teacher that was doing a job. So I don't see that it would be any different. And teachers don't complain. Did they complain at first? Yes, because it was all new. And parents complained because they didn't know what it was all about. And it was a real struggle. And there were certainly some days I thought, is this even going to be worth it? But we're glad that we persevered.
Mr. Chair, from there.
Follow up.
At David Douglas, do you have any staff dedicated solely to portfolio management?
Every single certified person, administrators, counselors, is a SIM mentor for about 10 kids, 5 ninth graders, 5 10th graders. And we have late arrival days, I think, like most school districts do now, where students come just for the purpose of putting tasks into their portfolio and updating them. I didn't speak, but I passed out a sheet. It says David Douglas High School, top SIM progress report. This is one of the ways that we streamlined the paperwork process. We used to do it by hand. Teacher would have to, student would bring me a portfolio entry, a work sample. I'd have to write it on the record sheet. We now have a computer program that one of our staff members wrote, FileMaker Pro, where everything is computerized. That not only does it make it look much more professional, but it's easier to document. And then that would go in the student's permanent file once they receive their SIM. But it indicates if they've met the proficiency, what the title of the project was, and it also has their test scores at the bottom.
So, Mr. Chair, while Newburgh High School and also Roseburgh High School and others hire full-time staff to manage portfolios, at David Douglas, you've not found that necessary.
No, we do have the one person that's a teacher on special assignment that's in school improvement, but they do SIM, CAM, and it's not managing the portfolios. It's more just organizing the whole program.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Dalto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do students pretty clearly understand the report and the expectations at the beginning of the year?
Oh, absolutely. And because it is carried through K through 12, anymore at the high school level, we probably have the easiest time because they've been accustomed to saving work samples and putting it in the portfolio and the whole system. So the teachers at the lower levels got the kids into the program.
Thank you.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you. Yeah,
appreciate your coming down. Alarna Walker, please.
Good afternoon. Is this picking up?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Lorna Walker, interested citizen. Coincidentally, I've done quite a bit of research in the area of education, processes of learning. And first of all, I have several points that I would like to make before you on this topic. One of the first one being that as we look at the history of education, the process of portfolio management and the actual keeping of portfolios is a very new concept when we look at it historically. Therefore, there is not the record of passage of time and accumulated experience established already to having been devoted to to refining the various elements of this process. And it came about as a recognized solution to a need that was presented. That need being the recognition that standardized tests were not fully giving a complete and accurate assessment. And there was a need for something beyond that. And when we look at this, there are some unique things that happen in the process of accumulation of portfolios. It's handled in many different ways by different individuals, by different schools, by different districts, for different reasons. Some of the former speakers have brought out some of the issues that some of the benefits of it. One of them being a process of self-evaluation that takes place as students review their portfolios. There is not agreement in process established yet as to whether a portfolio, once it's begun in the lower grades, whether that should be continually maintained and just added to continually through the high school years, or whether at certain stages along the way there should be a pull and replace process. Management, of course, is an interesting challenge with this. With the technology that we currently have, there are many options that are available, some of which have already been mentioned, that will allow making this an easier thing to manage and maintain over a period of time. As Representative Farr mentioned, he stores them. And some parents cherish storing this data. What happens in the process of this is, and I'll just briefly mention before leaving this, because I may not come back to this particular thing, when we look at ways of managing this, there are several things that can be done. One of the former speakers mentioned a video performance, or excuse me, portfolio performance, that's what I call it. Performance is a very valid form of evaluation. And this portfolio performance can be videotaped. There can be audio cassettes included in a portfolio. It can be recorded on a CD. The contents, instead of being removed, can be scanned, or they can be videotaped or photographed and put in to a non-paper form. In some things, the actual construction of the product may be of real value in maintaining, because the actual construction of a product that goes into the folder may uniquely set it apart from what anyone else might have done that might be similar. And so we need to keep an open thought about this particular type of thing. When we are looking at portfolios, we look at the history being it's really new, and a lot has been done in the short time that has lapsed, but there is much more to be accomplished, as has been already expressed here. One of the former speakers described what I would view to be a very good staff development process that would permit a staff to have a clear understanding of how to establish best practices in their active utilization. And a portfolio provides an alternative form of assessment, not designed to be the only form of assessment, but it provides an alternative form of assessment. There are some reasons for it to be. one of them being an alternative form of assessment. It uniquely offers an opportunity for the student to demonstrate an accomplishment of, we can describe this two different ways, assorted levels of thinking skills, or another way of saying it, to demonstrate higher levels of thinking skills, which may not be so easily demonstrated otherwise. But there is another item that is, I think, uniquely important about it. The concept of a portfolio offers an opportunity to establish a true continuity in the process of learning. It offers a way to make accountable continuity in learning. And this is particularly crucial when we look at at-risk students and those that are on the edge of the spectrum where we're not always demonstrating the best success. If a student is highly mobile, if a portfolio follows that student, there comes about an opportunity to establish immediately and quickly a level of continuity that is otherwise left open to a greater degree of chance or risk. And so having this available certainly does provide a tool to enhance consistency. Now, when we are looking at the portfolio in relation to the CINCAM, the concept of the CINCAM, a totally wonderful concept. I'm so thrilled to see this established for the same reason. It offers an opportunity to establish continuity and consistency in the education of the student, and also a way of being accountable to a standard. And the portfolio is one step in this process, which at this point, it might be premature to require this of everyone, because over the history of 12 years, not everyone has had the opportunity to develop this. And so for those students who are currently graduating, it's apt to cause some stress for those who are managing the program as well as for the students. But for that option to be there, it has been well demonstrated by some of the former speakers the real value that it offers. And over a period of time, as these processes are recognized and as people become more familiar and more comfortable with this concept, there is determined to be a better use for it. It's recognized that many businesses and many universities are placing the value on receiving portfolios, and although some may not be cognizant of it, or may, I would rather say, some may not have established it as a criteria, I think it would be a clearer way to say, it is of recognized value and will increasingly be of value as we look at what is happening across the United States in terms of education. Now, I feel that we are obligated to provide some alternative forms of assessment to accommodate different learning styles and to accommodate the assorted individuality of those who are processing through the system. When we are looking at the portfolio, it is not used exclusively with the writing process or with the math process. In the lower grades, oftentimes, a student may be involved in a project that will extend several months or perhaps throughout the whole school year. And in some instances, depending upon the nature of the teacher communication and teacher circumstance, a student may continue their individual deep investigation into topic areas that will extend over more than one school year. A portfolio provides a way of monitoring that and of the student developing a real body of knowledge that they can hang on to substantially during their life. Now, a common set of information going to people, obviously from the things that have been stated, how it's handled at the elementary, middle school, and high school level varies depending upon the relationship of the individuals, both to the teaching process, to best teaching practices, and the relationship to their management processes within their building. If we look at the process of instruction itself, evaluation is a part of a circle, an inherent part of the circle that permits a good instructional practice. It's one of the elements that permits a good instructional practice. And it's well established by research that there need to be alternative forms of assessment. And there have former speakers have mentioned that there are pending uses for portfolio assessment that are still in the early stages. My point repeatedly with this is that this is, if we look at it in terms of the process of education, it is a very new concept that has evolved out of a demonstrated need, and obviously by the presentations of former speakers, some of them have made very clear the inherent value. And the cost effectiveness is, in the long run, is going to be ultimately pared down as the processes are refined. The cost effectiveness is going to be reflected in a student who graduates with a much more secure and level of education, a much higher demonstrated set of skills, a much broader and sounder foundation. And with that, I would like to close and say thank you for hearing what I have to say on the topic. Do you have any questions?
Representative Hobson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have a comment. You said many things that were very provocative, and I appreciate that. One you said in particular that I liked is the advantage that it gives to educating kids that may be a little different from the same run of the mill. I also like the idea of the portfolio providing information on a new kid into the building. And the word, I think maybe the word you were searching for, rather than guessing what to do or at what level that child was, I can remember how hard it was to figure out what classes to put a new kid in because you really had no data, whereas the portfolio would provide you at least with some preliminary data. So thank you for many of your thoughts.
Yes, it does give some immediate information that if you have that in hand, it even precedes testing. It doesn't mean that you don't go through the normal testing processes, but it gives an immediate glance at these are skills that this person obviously needs, or these are skills that this person has already demonstrated, and we don't have to go back and retrack and do that all over again. It just, and if you're in a circumstance where, and this is going to vary school to school and district to district, sometimes there will be a student who will go K-12 through the same school system and through the same pattern of schools. In other instances, you may have students where the mobility rate may be on a semi-annual, even a monthly basis. And when a student is moving a lot, they are at a real disadvantage if there is not some way to provide a scenario of continuity for the individual. And this is a scenario that educators have to deal with. And there are many tools that are available to help meet these needs, but it is an issue that people have to deal with. Mobility is there. It can be an enhancement in life learning, and it also, if we don't have tools for meeting that, it can present some real challenges in establishing a consistent continuity in that educational process. Any other questions?
Thank you very much.
Have a good day.
Yeah. You too. Rob Kramer, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thanks very much for allowing me the opportunity to talk on this important subject. The question of work samples and portfolios is one that I think teachers have always collected portfolios and sent work samples home with the child to the parent as kind of a communication between the teaching and the parent to show how the child are doing. Whether or not we mandate portfolios and work samples in state law or for the accumulation of evidence that go into the completion of a SIM, I think is a different question. Good teaching has always involved some type of performance assessment and some type of a judgment on the daily work of the child and a collection of that evidence over time, and that has always been a part of teaching. I think the real question here is whether portfolio samples, work sample assessments, are an appropriate assessment for a large-scale, high-stakes assessment. That's the question here. Because in a very real sense, that's what we've developed in the state of Oregon over the last 12 years, is a high-stakes assessment which includes a subjectively scored work sample component as part of that high-stakes assessment. So the question, I think, really before this committee is whether portfolio assessments are appropriate for large-scale high-stakes assessments leading up to the completion of a SIM. Now, I think the committee is going to be looking at other bills regarding a SIM during the course of the session, but I'll narrow my focus on these comments today specifically to this question of portfolio assessments, what you might call alternative assessments or performance assessments, and they come in lots of shapes and sizes. Now, I believe the research shows that portfolio assessments, alternative assessments, performance assessments, call them what you will, are the most expensive form of possible form of assessments, with the possible exception of one-on-one interviews like they might do at Eton College in London or in England. Most expensive and the least reliable. Now, that's very important, especially the second part of that, the least reliable form of assessments, when you're talking about a high-stakes assessment. We should strive always in high-stakes assessments to have very reliable assessments, because it is, I believe, a civil rights violation to have an unreliable assessment in a high-stakes situation, and I believe that's what we have developed in the state of Oregon with the portfolio samples. Now, we know to get a SIM, we need 8 work samples, 3 speeches, 3 writing samples, and 2 math problem-solving samples, which they accumulate sometime between the 10th and, or between the 8th and 12th grade, hopefully by the 10th grade. Speaking specifically to reliability for a second, what's required in order to have any degree of inter-rater consistency when we look at a portfolio sample, we have to train thousands of teachers in very detailed and specific scoring guides. Teachers then, on a broad scale, have to be able to discern the difference. For instance, when we're looking at the speech work samples, they're rated in 4 areas, ideas and content, organization, language, and delivery. So those 4 areas are rated on speeches in 1 through 6. And so, for instance, a 6 in the ideas and content says that the speech, the content of the speech was, quote, extremely clear. To get a 5, it must be clear and focused. To get a 4, it's focused but limited in general. And to get a 3, it's clear and appropriate as opposed to clear and focused. So somebody has to do a lot of convincing to me to say we can teach thousands of teachers over the state of Oregon to make those distinctions on a scoring guide. And that's just one of 4 rating criteria on 1 of 3 speeches that the students must give. I would submit that we have a huge problem simply with one element of test validity, and that is consistency, inter-rater consistency. I think that's a holy grail in a performance assessment that we could never achieve unless we sent teachers into 3 weeks of training every 6 months just to make sure that they were completely on board with exactly how the state wanted them to rate each one of these scoring samples. And that's just for speeches. We have the same problem with math problem solving and the same exact problem with writing samples. So there's a huge inter-rater consistency problem. There's also, and I don't want to get technical with test construction language, but there's a face validity and a criterion validity problem also with portfolio assessments. And again, teachers will always have portfolio assessments as a summative or as a formative assessment, that is, to form their assessment of how the child is progressing academically. They always have, and they always will. The question here is whether portfolio samples are good for a summative assessment, especially in a high-stakes assessment environment, which is what we have. So I'm not arguing that good teachers can and always have used portfolio assessment principles for their day-to-day instruction and assessment of children's progress. That always has and always will happen. The question is whether it's useful in a high-stakes environment. I believe there are serious problems with reliability and validity, which then go into civil rights issues, because it is unfair to assess kids on unreliable tests when they are high-stakes tests. A short word about the cost. I believe that when people think about the cost of these things, they don't fully get a picture of the broad scope of the impact that these tests, these forms of assessments, have on an educational system. There are hard costs, like the development of all the scoring guides and the criteria for the assessments that's done by the State Department of Education, and then the communication of those criteria and scoring guides to all of the teachers and even the parents in the system, which spends, over the course of years, millions and millions of dollars, and training all the teachers in how to use the scoring guides so we have some degree of inter-rater consistency. And then, of course, the scoring of all the work samples during the course of the year. We have a high school with 2,400 kids, and all of them are going to have 8 work samples. We're in the thousands and thousands of work samples that have to be scored by somebody. We're putting a burden on the teachers. Typically, they have to do it at night to score all these work samples, which I believe is also not fair, and it's generally uncompensated, and the effect is it crowds out time teachers must spend and want to spend planning lessons for the next day and planning their instructional day. The soft dollar cost is the time in the class that students spend performing all of these tasks. And just think of 3 speech work samples in a cohort of 300 high school freshmen entering a moderate-sized high school. So 900 speeches have to be given at a minimum. Now, those are all typically given in class situations where kids are watching each other give speeches 900 times during the course of just one simple class. Now, out of those 900, the teachers then score them, and probably 600 or 700 will get a 4 or better, meaning the other 200 or 300 have to give a speech again in order to pass the work sample test. And so there's these iterations of kids standing around and watching each other give speeches that consumes an inordinate amount of class time. It's clear to me that class time can never be replaced. Time out of an 8th grader or a 10th grader's instructional day is time gone forever. Watching each other give speeches or listening to each other read the writing samples. So the cost, the impact on the class, I think, is the biggest cost in this kind of structure of work samples that we have. So I'll wrap up with that. I think that it should be an issue of local control. If schools, if school systems, if they find that they want to use portfolios in their formative assessments or even for a graduation criteria, they should be free to do so. But I think it's wrong to have this mandated onto all the schools in the state. I understand there's some question about whether this is mandated. Now, it's my belief, and I'd have to go back and check this, that the Section 329 of ORS says that there will be an assessment system that will be comprised of criterion reference tests and portfolio assessments. And so I don't see how this is not a mandatory thing on our schools, and it certainly, we've heard some from teachers that considered that it was. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Representative Hobson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a couple of questions, if I might go
forward.
Yes, please.
Them. Mm-hmm.
And Rob, I picked up on a number of things that you said, and I want to read my questions since I wrote them down as I was listening to you. You mentioned that looking at a piece of work and evaluating it was not reliable and was not a good evaluation. Could you explain how that is not reliable if you have a student, a parent, and a professional looking at something and they can't evaluate it by looking at it?
Mr. Chair and Representative Hobson, I don't believe I said that it's not reliable for a teacher to make a judgment as to the quality of a performance task. My point I tried to make was that it is, if we have a detailed scoring guide of 1 through 6 for any given work sample, a speech or a writing sample or math problem solving, the chance that we can have consistency between different people who might rate that same work sample is, I think, very minimal. We'll have a large degree of inter-rater inconsistency, and I think the research shows that to be quite true. When the state does the third and fifth grade or the fifth and eighth grade writing samples and math problem solving samples, there's about 20% disagreement with the two raters that rate those things, and much of the time that's at the cut score, which is a problem.
Follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And in talking about the rating or the evaluation of speeches, you indicated how unreliable that was, and then you also talked about people standing around watching others. What's an alternative to rating speeches to that method?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hobson, an alternative to, I'm not sure I understand the question. You're saying, should...
Let me rephrase it then. If you're trying to rate or evaluate student speeches from in a speech class or something, what is a better way of doing it?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hobson, I think they should be evaluated by teachers. The question is, should the speeches and other work samples be evaluated in a high-stakes assessment system? That's the question. Teachers have always given grades to work the students do. That is appropriate and will continue to be appropriate. And you could say a work sample scoring guide is simply a way to grade a speech. And that's wonderful, and I think that's fine. The question is, should this be done in an arena of high-stakes assessments? And I don't think it should be.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, excuse me. Representative Dalto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick question, Mr. Kramer. I guess you had a concern about having students having to spend time watching other students give speeches as part of their evaluation. I know personally for me, a lot of what I learn is often by example and watching other people do things the right way as I perceive them, and so I've always felt that that was an important learning tool. I guess I don't have a concern about having students watch each other perform. I think it's a valuable way for them to learn, you know, what perhaps the right way is, what not the right way is, and things like that. So why the concern about that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Dalto, I think it would be a question of how much. That is, yes, I think kids do learn from each other, and watching other children give speeches is a valuable activity for up to a point. But would that be 6 weeks of a school year? Would you say that would be of value to have kids watch each other for 6 weeks of a school year, do nothing but give speeches? I'm exaggerating. Obviously, that's not what happens. But the question is, how much of it is of use, and where does the cost of that activity outweigh the benefit of that activity? And I would argue that with the system of work samples we have, three speeches for each child, that we've gotten past the point where the cost is outweighing the value.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
But do you think that's a legislative issue, or is that a local issue?
Mr. Chair, Representative Balto, I think it should be a local issue, and I believe now it is a legislative issue because it's my belief that this has been mandated on the system. That is, every school is mandated to have a system of assessments, including criterion and portfolio assessments, that has now been defined by the state, the 10 work samples that go into the SIM, and so the schools must have the system in place to assess, give, and track these assessments.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Nolan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Kramer, I want to follow along the lines of reasoning that Representative Hobson started, because the exchange provoked some curiosity on my part, particularly your concern about the reliability of a subjective judgment. And in speeches, it is hard for me to imagine anything other than a subjective judgment. And in writing samples, it's hard to imagine anything other than good judgment, trained judgment, making those decisions. Knowing whether you've added a series of numbers correctly is pretty straightforward. So I want you to extend for me your concern about using subjective judgment to the application of grades at all. Should we throw out that whole system as well?
Mr. Chair, Representative Nolan.
High-stakes situation.
Grades are not the same as high-stakes situation, as a high-stake test. Those are two different scenarios. In a grade, you have A through F, perhaps, and you have a chance to retake a test or retake a class if you funked it. In a high-stakes test, it's pretty much a one-shot yes or no, and therefore we should try to keep subjective grading out of high-stakes assessments.
A follow-up. If we want to assess a student's ability to communicate, and we've agreed that you can't eliminate judgment on that, are there other ways we could reduce the unreliability that you see here, or improve the comparative value of an assessment from one grader to another?
Mr. Chair, Representative Nolan,
that's
a question that many people who are more immersed in test construction validity questions than I have thought about and tried to tackle for many, many years. So I don't think I'm qualified to speak on that, except to reiterate the point I'm trying to make is we are always going to have subjective judgments with child classroom work, always. The question is, should we have subjective judgments in a high-stakes test? And that's what I think we should try to minimize, not maximize.
One last follow-up.
And
it sounds like we're not going to agree about whether grades are an equally high-stake situation as a SIM, since every school I know of, certainly high schools, have a grade point average requirement to get a diploma. So that seems to me to make it high stakes. But getting back to the issue of making more reliable understanding, this is not your area of expertise, but wouldn't we improve the reliability across raters if we had some way of assuring that the raters had a common training and understanding and qualification? And doesn't the standards and practices licensing process do that for us?
Mr. Chair, Representative Nolan, indeed, the more training you do teaching the people who will be scoring work samples about the criteria in the scoring guide, the more you're going to have inter-rater consistency. And I believe it's also true that once that training happens, the next day and the next day, you'll have still a pretty high level of consistency. But the farther away you get from that training, then the teachers, the people who are scoring those guys, tend to have more and more disagreement. And so, yes, one way to improve that would be to have more and more of that type of teacher training, sending teachers who are scoring the work samples back into retraining and retraining consistently doing that. But again, I suggest that's very high cost, and it's not something that's a chase for a holy grail for a objective scoring of an inherently subjective activity.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Kramer.
Thank you very much, Rob, and thanks again to all of you who have stepped forward to testify and express your views, and we hope this has been enlightening for you as it has been for us. So, with that, we'll adjourn and have a good weekend.